Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on Sunday, March 2nd, 2014, on the Premier Radio Networks. This is episode 1062. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace which connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and get a $50 Amazon gift card when you get a loan. And by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster, easier, and cheaper. Post your job to 50-plus job boards with one click. Try ZipRecruiter free for a 4-day trial at ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. And by RingCentral. The cloud-based phone system we use just got better with the launch of Meetings, the full-service video conference feature. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral starts at under $25 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial, and when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to a total of 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. Oh my goodness, here it is, time once again for the Tech Guy Show. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater, smartphones, digital photography and all that jazz. We do it every week at this time, and I'm glad you're here. Let me give you my phone number if you have a question, a thought, you'd like to share your insights, bare your soul, or you just want a little hand-holding on the information superhighway. The number is 888-ASK-LEO. That's 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Your questions, your comments, your suggestions. I'd love to hear from you. We talked yesterday. I was talking with Grant, young gentleman who has a Galaxy S4, the new Galaxy phone. And he... It's not new anymore. I guess the Galaxy S5 was announced this week. And he was bemoaning the fact that the 16 gigabyte version comes with only 9 gigabytes free. That's because Samsung likes to add a lot of software to their phone. Software, I'm curious, do you think that's valuable if any of you have a Galaxy S3 or S4 or Galaxy Note 2 or Note 3? Really, it's the Note 3 and the S4, the most recent versions of the Galaxy phones from Samsung that have the most, I call it, junk, cruft, you know, weird little Samsung apps that you're probably never going to use. I wish they would just leave the Google stuff on there or let you use the Google. For instance, the Samsung S Voice is not as good, as far as I'm concerned, is not as good as the Google voice dictation, the voice commands. But you'd have to go jump through hoops to get rid of it, or you can't get rid of it, but just to kind of disable it. There's a lot of stuff like that on a Galaxy phone. And I understand why Samsung does it. They want to distinguish themselves from every other Android phone. So this is the only... You'll have to get a Samsung phone to use these features, including that new Galaxy Gear Watch that they're selling. But it messes it up, and it messes it up, and you can't uninstall it. It's like, remember the days, the bad old days of buying a PC and have 800 trial... Oh, it still is that way, isn't it? 800 pieces of trialware that you never wanted to use. Yeah, well, this is like that. Except you can't uninstall it. The trialware you can uninstall on a PC. Well, bad news. The new Galaxy S5 is on its way. They announced it this week in Barcelona at Mobile World Congress. And Rajesh Pandey of Cult of Android ran over to the demo table to take a look at the Galaxy S5. Very much like the S4. Very little difference, frankly. A little bit bigger screen. A little bit more power, a little bit better camera, 16 megapixels instead of 13. The camera was very good on the S4. But the bad news, there's only 8 gigabytes free out of the box on the 16 gig version. They've put even more Samsung cruft on it. Ay, ay, ay. I thought they were going the other way. I thought they'd made a deal with Google to put less on there. I thought the South Korean government passed a law saying you have to be able to uninstall this stuff. No. Worse than ever. So Grant and others, you know, Grant called saying, how can I take the Samsung Galaxy stuff off here and just make it a pure Google phone? And he was having a hard time doing it because Samsung doesn't want you to do it. So frustrating. Frustrating. I hope that, well, I had hoped that they were getting the message. They do offer a Google Play edition of the Galaxy S4. You know, the problem is it's kind of going too far the other way. Then it's a pure plain Google version, and there might be some Samsung stuff you want. For instance, I love the Galaxy Note 3. That's the 5.7-inch humongous phone, and it comes with a stylus. And it comes with some Samsung software that uses a stylus. That stuff's good, and you don't want to get – I wouldn't want to get rid of that. I do want to get rid of the golf mode in the camera. I use that as an example. There's 16 different modes, many of them completely useless, silly modes. You know, the picture-in-picture mode where it has a – you're taking a picture of something and you have a little picture of your head in the – that's – I find it less than useful. But on the other hand, the stylus stuff I would like to keep. Why is it so hard to make a great phone? Mobile World Congress in Barcelona this week, there were other announcements. Nokia, which is about to be subsumed by Microsoft. Microsoft bought the Nokia phone division. So all the Nokia phones will soon be a Microsoft product, as soon as China approves. They have the approval of the U.S. government. They have the approval of the European Commission. But they still, I guess, have to get China's approval. As soon as China says okay, they do seem to be dragging their feet. Microsoft will, the Nokia phone division will become a subsidiary of Microsoft. And, of course, Nokia makes the best Windows phones, really good ones. The Lumia line are excellent. But they also make very low-cost phones for areas where there aren't phone subsidies. You know, here in the U.S., we're a little spoiled because the phone company actually subsidizes a phone. We see a price that's a lot lower than the actual sales price. You know, $200 for a Galaxy S4 when it really would cost about $600 or $700 to buy outright. There are many, many countries where the phone companies don't do those kinds of subsidies, and people aren't going to spend $600 or $700 for a phone. So Nokia sells very well. They sell 35 euro phones, about $50. In fact, less because if that's the list price. We're talking $40 phones in many cases. And they, of course, they don't do a whole lot. They're phones. They have a little bit of, you know, some features. But then Nokia is going to make a middle-of-the-range phone. See, their Lumias are way too expensive for these emerging markets, these new markets, new to smartphones. The Nokia X, they announced, and the X is based not on Windows Phone, but Android. And that's got to just frost Microsoft a little bit. Hey, that's the other guy's operating system. You should be using Windows Phone. Not sure what it means. It might mean, I think that they can't get explicit approval from Microsoft. That's kind of the way it works when you're acquiring a company. You can't then collude until the acquisition is final. But they must have gotten a wink, a nudge, a subtle nod from the CEO of Microsoft, the new one, Satya Nadella, must have said, when they said this. If he'd shaken his head vigorously, you have to think they would have said no. So what does that mean? Is Microsoft going to abandon Windows Phone? Windows Phone is arguably the best operating system on smartphones out there. It's beautiful. It's slick. It's elegant. But it was late to the game, and nobody's written very few applications compared to Android and iOS. People are used to Android and iOS, so it's just, you know, it hasn't gained much market share. People don't seem to want this phone. So is Microsoft going to throw in the towel and say, okay, we'll make Android phones? I don't think so. I think they're going to make both. Actually, all three, because they're still going to make low-cost feature phones that are for sale in the poorest nations to the poorest people. Get them into the Microsoft ecosystem. The middle-of-the-line phones, still inexpensive. We're talking $100 phones and less. The Nokia X phones. Those will be, you know, Android-based, but with Microsoft services on top of it. You know, Bing Search, OneDrive, the Microsoft storage, the old formerly SkyDrive. That kind of thing. And that gets people hooked into Microsoft. And then if they want to get a better phone, they may get a Windows phone. So I think Microsoft is going to do that. What else did we see? Lenovo says, yes, we're going to make a new Moto X. They're about to acquire Motorola, the Motorola Mobility Division from Google. And my beloved phone, I mean, this to me, this is the phone, the Android phone of choice, is the Moto X. I really, really like it. And I was a little disappointed because I was hoping Google would continue to create this kind of simple, pure phone. Lenovo's never made phones for sale in the U.S. This is their entree into the U.S. and Europe and South America. They're a Chinese company. Does very well in China. And they also make the ThinkPads. You're used to the, I mean, I'm sure you've heard of their computers. They said, yeah, we're going to make a summertime, this summer you're going to have a new Moto X. And I'm a little hopeful. Maybe they'll make it a little higher end. It was kind of a low end, you know, small screen, low res screen. Maybe they'll make it a little bit better. It's a great phone. I just hope they don't load it up with all that stuff the other guys seem to do. Something a little pure. Was a rumor that Google was going to get out of the phone business, stop making the Nexus phones. They actually don't make them. They hire other companies like LG to make them. I think that that's not the case now. I think we're going to still see those. Anyway, there's the phone news from Barcelona. Now your calls. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by a brand new sponsor. I'm excited. We always love when we get new sponsors. Yay, new sponsor, new sponsor. The new sponsor is here. It's called Prosper, and I want you to go to prosper.com/twit. What is Prosper? Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending market. You've heard of these kind of micro-lenders and so forth. If you knew, for instance, that in 72 hours you'd have $35,000 just to cover your needs, what would you do? Would you pay off your high-rate credit cards, start a business, do that home improvement project? Prosper, very interesting idea, and I think brilliant. Lets you fill out an easy online application. You provide a few details. You'll see a rate online almost instantly. Low fixed rate. They're unsecured personal loans. You don't have to put up collateral. Multi-year term availables. So this, you know, at this loan rate, paying off all your credit cards just makes sense. Get that loan off your back, pay it down. Prosper has over 2 million members. There is over $900 million in funded loans. This is peer-to-peer lending. Go to prosper.com/twit. You could check your rate. It will not affect your credit score, by the way. They don't report it in. And for a limited time, Prosper is offering Twit viewers a $50 Amazon gift card when you get a loan. Go to prosper.com/twit. You can see all the information there. Up to $35,000 in just 3 days, and you get that $50 gift card when you get the loan. A note, Amazon.com is not a sponsor of this promotion. Other restrictions apply. See the website for details. All personal loans are made by WebBank, a Utah Chartered Industrial Bank member, FDIC, equal housing lender. Prosper.com/twit. What a good idea. And, this copy doesn't mention lending, but I presume you can go here and also become a Prosper lender. Prosper.com/twit. It is a new world, peer-to-peer lending at a very affordable rate. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. The phone ranger is here for her last day before she heads off to Tanzania. She's going on safari, phone ranger. That's exciting. Have a great time in Tanzania.
Do I need a musket?
A musket? What is a? You mean like a rifle? You mean you want to have a little powder horn and a lead ball that you jam in there and fire once?
No.
Not a musket.
No, I want to pet the lion, not hurt the lion.
Yeah, you do want to bring a good camera. I take it your dad's lending you a good camera.
It's pretty good. I think you would say I needed a bigger lens, but I have to pack light, and I'm just going with it.
Yeah, you don't want a super long lens because they're heavy, but on the other hand, you don't want to get that close to the lions. Mm-hmm. So that's the choice. Do I want to get mauled or do I want heavy luggage? decisions.
I still like the selfie idea. Hey, I'm in Tanzania. Look at me with this lion. Famous last words.
What are we going to give her if she gets a selfie with a lion? Wow. I bet people do that.
Of course. Look at those idiots that went to the San Francisco Zoo and went in, you know, the tiger came out and got them, you know, whatever.
Is that what they were doing, trying to get a selfie?
I don't know about that, but they were too
little
close.
Little Instagram
and they were
shot.
Unkind.
That's not good. That is not good.
Yeah.
Do we have? I think we do. a caller I should talk to here?
Yeah, this is perfect and really timely because of the Oscars ceremony. Jim is in the midst of a move, and he's like, oh, I don't have time to set up the full TV. Is there a way I can just get regular broadcast?
That's a good question. Yeah. And are you not leaving before the Oscars, I hope.
I am not.
You planned that carefully.
I might watch a little bit out of the corner of my eye while I pack.
You'll be home to watch the red. That's always a test of how much of an Oscar fan. Are you going to watch Joan Rivers or not?
No.
That's even on a different channel. You have to tune to one. That's just too much trouble. Well, let's find out. Let's talk to, who did you say again? Jim and Chino Hills?
Jim and Chino Hills,
yeah. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, how you doing, boss?
I am well.
Well, I am wet and just finished a move. Got an Oscar celebration tonight for my wife and best friend.
Yeah.
Trying to hook up a Insignia 50-inch LCD TV. We had Fios. It's not going to be hooked up till Tuesday.
Because, this is the first year they're streaming the Oscars over the internet.
Did hear that. That is one option, but we didn't want to all cross.
You have to watch it on a laptop, and if you don't have your Fios yet. But, yeah, abc.go.com/watch-live. Could they make it a more complicated URL? Ridiculous. Now, you have to determine your location.
Yes.
And then you have to enter in your cable company. And this is what they always do now, is you have to actually prove that you would be watching it on a cable company. And by the way, now I'm seeing a big ad on the cable company site. Thank you, Xfinity. Good Lord, don't you make enough money for me? But Verizon Fios is one of the providers. So, if presumably in your area you can log in and watch it on your laptop, but you don't have your internet yet.
Correct.
So, do you have are you near enough in the big city? You could use an antenna.
Well, I'm in. That's the issue. That's what I'm trying to figure out. I'm in Chino Hills.
Yeah.
Right off of a couple major intersections, 71, 91, and I can see up through the valleys, but. Yeah, we are down in the hills. Now, I've gone to the...
So you've never used... This is a new house. You've never tried it with an antenna.
Correct. Yeah. I have been to the SEC's website to determine what channels are available in your area.
Yeah.
Antenna... Go.
You know, on the one hand, if you do have a good connection to ABC, which is the network that's broadcasting, your local ABC channel is receivable, it will be the highest quality you can get because... broadcast high def is less compressed than cable or satellite high def.
That's what I hear.
Yeah. So, and it sounds like that's your only choice. You don't have internet, and I presume your cable TV is not hooked up, or your dish or whatever.
Everything's down. Absolutely.
Yeah.
We just literally finished the move yesterday in the rain. So, got boxes everywhere, and was trying to get.
Isn't moving the worst? And every time I do it, I say the last. I'm never leaving this house. They're taking me out in a pine box.
I know.
So here's the deal. Here's a great website, better than the FCC website. It's TV Fool. I'm going to bring it down. Every time I mention it, it crashes because everybody goes there. But later in the day, go to tvfool.com, and you'll enter in your location, your address, literally, and it'll tell you, whether you'll be able to receive. It actually gives you an amazing chart, more than just like, yes, you can get it. You actually get an amazing color chart of the signal strength. And that should give you a pretty good idea. Now, remember, you're going to have an antenna probably. Obviously, it's too late to put one up on the roof.
Right. And I didn't know if there's any recommendations as far as indoor. That's why I started getting confused. Omnidirectional versus unidirectional versus what I've been reading on the website. Some of them say if you go for VHF channels, it's better to get specific VHF versus one that covers.
Yeah,
VHF.
But this is, this, you know what? They're going to tell you what to get a TV for.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So this is an all-purpose thing. If you can specify an antenna height, that will help. But this is going to basically, it considers your terrain because, of course, mountains and so forth between you and the television antennas are going to make a difference. It'll use the transmitter's own databases to see what their footprint is and whether you'll have a strong enough signal. And really, if the signal's strong, as somebody in the chat room says, a wire coat hanger will work. If it's only if the signal's weak that you might need something more directional. Yeah, we've brought the site down, I'm sorry to say. So go later. Go to TV. Go later. Don't go too late. And then you probably, if you need an antenna, you can go to Radio Shack. They have, they have the right antennas.
Probably the best place. Okay.
Yeah. Perfect. You don't need anything too, I'm thinking, will not need anything too fancy. But you don't know because you've never, you know, you've never lived there before, have you?
Right. No. And being in the valley, I'm kind of worried if it might have an effect on the line of sight to the transmitter.
It doesn't have to be line of sight, but it helps.
I gotcha.
Yep.
Okay.
Good luck. TVFool, FOOL.com. It's really a great site, but they don't expect the millions of people that go there every time I mention it. So it inevitably crashes. We also send people to AntennaWeb.org. That's one created by the Consumer Electronics Association. And that's not as good a site as TVFool, but it seems to stay up a little bit better. You know, there are all kinds of antennas. There's Yagi antennas, which are directional, Y-A-G-I. Those can even be in the house, although best on the roof, obviously. If you can get up on the roof or higher up and get over the mountain to get line of sight, that's going to be better, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Web 4278 in our chat room is saying he really likes the WineGuard flatwave amped antenna. WineGuard is a third-party antenna company, does a very nice job, and he likes the flatwave amped. He says he was not able to get anything until he tried this antenna, and I'm pretty sure Radio Shack carries WineGuard. The amped 20 dB boost was the trick. He got it at Costco for $40. Wow. Leaf antenna. There's a wind or wind antenna. WineGuard.com, WineGard.com. We'll put a link. I'll tell you what, all of this stuff in the show notes. Also, Kappen is recommending SolidSignal.com as a place you could shop for the antennas. But again, you need to go somewhere. This is where a brick and mortar really is nice. You need to go somewhere where you can take it home with you tonight. Let's not miss the Oscars. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Todd Laguna Beach, you're next. Hi, Leo. Hi, Todd. I'm Leo. You're Todd. I'm Leo. How are you doing?
First time caller. I was listening to George Norrie the other evening, Coast to Coast. He wasn't happy. There's a new app coming out for $1 where somebody could listen in without the other person knowing, listen in on someone's phone calls. Now, my question is this. Can that be used? Can somebody listen in with that app on a non-smartphone, on one of those cheap?
First of all, completely bogus.
That is bogus.
The whole thing is bogus. George, look, I love George. Nice guy. But he makes a living by scaring you. There's no such app. Did he say the name of the app?
No, he said, I'm not
going to
give.
Of course he's not going to, because there is no app. That's not possible.
Okay. And he was so upset about it, you know, and I listen to your show every weekend. I listen to him every, you know, night. KFI's on all the time. And I was
George. George is great. It's entertainment. Coast to Coast has always been an entertainment show. I wouldn't take it too seriously. This is where he got it from, is a site called The Daily Caller. It's called Crowd Pilot. Let strangers listen to your phone calls.
Right.
That's only if you invite them. you have to stream your phone calls into the Crowd Pilot website. The point of it is, the idea of Crowd Pilot is you could get advice from your friends and so forth. So you could say, hey, I'm calling Leo and I would like you to listen in. You have to turn it on. This is bogus. You can't, you know, it would be, of course, highly illegal to do this, and they would never be able to sell it on the App Store. In fact, I'm surprised that they are able to sell it anyway. But so, no, don't fear not. There is no magic app that lets bad guys or anybody listen into your phone calls unless they're standing over your shoulder. Now, the NSA can listen in. We know that much. No, actually, they even say we don't listen to the phone calls. We just collect the data. CrowdPilot is on the App Store. And I'll read you the description on the iTunes preview in big, bold letters. CrowdPilot does not listen in or intercept phone calls. It is for in-person conversations where all parties involved have the app and see it running. You can't use it to spy on somebody. Now, if you set it up and you connect it to your Facebook, then perhaps your Facebook friends could listen in. This is not anything you need to worry about. It wouldn't be on the App Store if it were. And my suspicion is it's probably not a great program anyway. The idea is you can start a session on CrowdPilot, invite your Facebook friends to listen in, or go to crowdpilot.me and allow them to listen in. They even allow you to hire assistants for $1 each. George, I love George, and it may well be that George misunderstood how this works. It's a party line, and all parties involved have to agree. George in Houston, Texas, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, George.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to do something that sounds very simple, but apparently it's kind of perplexing because I can't find a program that will do it. I want to print the content of a folder and all of its folders inside of it. Making a screenshot doesn't work. I did find a program that will do it, but it costs $30. Is there a free program that will allow me to do that? I have Windows 7.
Windows 7. Yeah, this is something we used to do all the time with things like Norton Commander. I take it you don't want the contents of the files. You just want the folder, the directory tree.
Yes.
Yeah. So you see all the file names and folder names. Norton Commander's gone, but there are, of course, many, Norton Commander clones out there. I don't know what is current. The chat room will help me out, though, any minute now. With suggestions for alternatives to Norton Commander. You know, there's a great website, Alternative. I'm going to check with them. Alternative 2 that shows you could say, I need something like Norton Commander. In fact, let me try it right now. Norton Commander and see what they say. And yeah, look at this. There's a whole bunch of them. This alternative2.net is the website. There's Free Commander, MU Commander, Proto, EF Commander. I'll tell you what, I'll put a link to this search in the show notes. There's quite a few programs. Padre says he likes Karen's Power Tools. Karen's great. She writes these wonderful tools, and she has one called Karen's Power Tools Directory Printer. That seems like that would do it.
Okay.
I like her, and I think all of her stuff is free, isn't it? I'm just checking with our chat room to see. I believe it's free. File Commander is a good one. KarenWare.com is where you get the power tools. Kate, yeah, I should interview Karen. I don't even know who Karen is, but she makes these great power tools. They're wonderful. Karen, KarenWare.com. And the chat room says, and you see there's quite a few of them, but Directory Printer will do exactly what you want. Oh, this is sweet. It will It will print all of the stuff out. It's absolutely free. Do everything you want.
I'll check that out. One other thing, I appreciate it. Thank you. And one other thing I'd like to ask you, kind of a personal question. Are you part Italian?
I am. How'd you know that?
Every now and then I hear it in your voice. it comes through. I know
I'm not from Italy, but my grandmother was. Third generation, I guess. She came when she was a teenager. She moved to America from Genoa. My father's mother. She made wonderful Italian food. And so my mom, for my dad, made wonderful Italian food. So I still eat a lot of ravioli and spaghetti. And that's probably what you're hearing in my speech patterns. Every once in a while. Karen's power tools are also a really good thing for a lot of other features. I think I wonder who Karen is. I would like to know more about Karen. Karen has written for Windows Magazine and WinMag.com for almost a decade, it says on her website. Her free Power Tools newsletter has 80,000 subscribers, 100 new subscribers every day. She writes custom programs, develops websites. This really is from the grand old days of Windows shareware. Remember you'd go to a user group and the user group would have a librarian who sat at a table filled with diskettes that would do everything? This is from that era. It's from that era. There is now, and we'll put this in the show notes. You can use the command line. If you're a DOS. Oh, Karen passed away. I'm sorry. Oh, dear. She passed away in 2011. So the site lives on. We might want to update that. Kappen in our chat room has given us a command line because if you know why buy a tool when you can use a DOS command? Here you go. You ready? We'll put this in the show notes. I don't think this is going to be as pretty a layout as you would get with Karen's Power Tools. DIR space slash A colon D space slash W space right angle bracket space PRN colon. Basically, that says do a directory and all the subdirectories in it and print it out. Not going to be that pretty. Get the Karen Power Tool. And you know, it's sad. Condolences to Karen's family. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You can dance. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, dancing away on another Sunday. 8888, ask Leo. That's the number. Paul is in Los Angeles. Our next call. Hi, Paul. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo. Long-time listener, first-time caller, and I want to say thank you for all the great work you do. I have a dilemma. I own a couple of old iPods. I do not have a computer, but I can get to one if it need be. My problem is I have some interviews I conducted between the last 8 and 12 years now. I had an old Belkin microphone. It plugged into the top of these iPods. And I conducted interviews with World War II veterans, some of whom were close friends. Some of them have since died. They are irreplaceable, priceless, of course. And I need the iPods are dying, okay? And I know they can be transferred from an iPod somewhere, but if Apple officially, people at the Apple store say, no, it can't be done.
What? No, official way to do it is easy, and it is official, but it does require a computer and iTunes.
Okay, I can get to that if I need to, sure.
Yeah, you have to.
Okay.
Maybe that's what they're saying, is there's no way to do it without a computer. But absolutely, you can do it, and it's official. I'm surprised the people at the store didn't tell you this. You probably could do it at an Apple store. The key is that you need to launch plug it. Well, now, wait a minute now.
I have not only these interviews, I have a bunch of CDs that I might, store-bought CDs. And I can always put those on a new iPod if I get another computer.
Yeah.
But they said you can't transfer off an iPod unless...
Well,
it's just impossible, they say.
And it's not impossible. They don't want to tell you about it. So
right.
This was a deal that Apple made with the record industry because, of course, the record industry took one look at an iPod.
Right.
And they said thousands of songs in your pocket and you bring it over to your friend's house and then he copies the thousands of songs over. It's
right.
The ultimate piracy device.
Right.
So Apple, realizing that this was a no-win situation for them, they needed to get the record industry on board, pretended, and they continue to apparently, that there was no way to get your stuff off of the iPod
right.
Without officially doing it in iTunes. And the way, and this is the risk, and you got to be very careful. If you were to take that iPod and connect it to somebody's iTunes, the first thing iTunes would say is, this iPod is not linked to this account.
Exactly.
You want me to erase it.
Right.
And of course, you don't want to do that.
Right.
So, probably the best thing to do is to get a program. Are you on, is it Windows or Mac? I guess it doesn't really matter.
Well, these were formatted for Mac.
Okay. There's a program that is probably do everything you want. I would recommend it. There are a number of programs. Snooty is one. That's iTunes backwards. But MacroPlant makes one that almost everybody agrees is the best. It's called iExplorer.
iExplorer, okay.
It's at macroplant.com. And the whole point of it is, yeah, you can see everything that's on the iPod, pull it off without erasing it. Apple doesn't want anybody to kind of know this.
Exactly. That's what the store employees told me. That was the official line.
They even said they wink, wink, nudge, nudge, right?
Right, yeah.
Here's another one. It's called SharePod. The reason is that you can see on a computer, if you're not running iTunes, you can see the contents of the iPod. They're just kind of... obscured. They're hidden away. But it didn't take long for people to write programs that do this. There's lots of them.
Now, if I want to take those interviews and not just put them onto it, say I want to transfer them onto a portable hard drive at some point.
Well, the first thing, you do need a computer for that. You really will want to do this on a computer, and you'll transfer it to the computer. And do this pronto, because if the iPod dies or you lose it, you've lost everything.
I know, yeah.
So waste no time. Get somebody who's got a computer who's a little expert, the better.
Right.
Who will run one of these programs, macroplant.com, Senuti, S-E-N-U-T-I, same thing. They'll run that program on their computer. They'll pull off all the files, including the very important files that you want to save. And at that point, I'd immediately make copies onto a CD.
Well, that's what my next question was going to be, exactly, because some of the family members of some of these vets say, Paul, we'd love to have these for, you know,
of course,
family.
Of course. And the easiest thing for them would be to make an audio CD of those interviews.
Okay.
But that audio CDs only hold 70 minutes worth. Whereas if you do a data CD, and it's the same, it's very similar process, you can hold probably all of the files on a single data CD. So very important. Make a backup onto a hard drive. Make a backup onto a data CD. Get a USB key. Make it on that. Those are cheap. Make as many copies as you can. Distribute copies, either data or audio. Those are two different kinds of data files.
Right.
To less experienced users who probably have a CD player, giving them a CD with their loved one's audio on it, it's going to be the easiest.
Could I transfer them to a DVD? Because
absolutely.
DVDs hold so much more. I know
absolutely.
I could probably put all of them on there.
Easily. That's 4.7 gigabytes. Right. That's going to be more than the capacity of 20 iPods all put together.
Right.
So it's not going to be hard to back these up.
Okay.
Do get the data off and back it up as many places as you can if it's valuable, and it obviously is.
I've just been so worried that, you know,
I don't blame you.
If you pull the battery out, it'll die, you know, it'll erase everything.
No. The good news is it's non-volatile.
Okay.
So it's not going to go away. But it's probably prudent. I mean, you could lose it. They're small.
Right.
It's probably prudent to get this transferred over. It's the same issue that we talk about with backup all the time. I would make three copies of it at least.
Okay.
Two different kinds of media. So you're not reliant just on CDs. You're not reliant just on hard drives or USB drives. Use all three. This would be a good case to get Carbonite or some sort of online storage so you've backed it up to the cloud too. Then you've got copies everywhere.
Wow. Well, Leo, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's been a long time project. I'm still continuing these interviews.
Good. What a great idea.
Fighting against time, of course.
And, I'm so glad you're collecting the stuff from the greatest generation. That's really
absolutely
worth having.
Much appreciated, Leo. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for doing that. Again, be very careful when you do hook up an iPod to iTunes. If it's not the iTunes you set the iPod up with in the first place, it'll say, hey, I don't, you know, can I erase this? And don't. Do not. You want to make a copy. But fortunately, many programs exist to do this. And it's really, really well worthwhile. Sean from the UK. Hi, Sean.
Yeah, hi, Leo. I spoke to you before.
It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, I spoke to you about the Raspberry Pi previously.
Yes.
You know, in episode 1046?
Yes, from Cambridge, the Raspberry Pi computer, which is taking over the world. I mean, that is such a successful project. It's wonderful.
Oh, yeah, I bought a second one recently.
Yeah, little $25 computer. People are doing all sorts of projects with it. What can I do for you this time, Sean?
Yeah, hi. I've got a really big, I really need to know what's the best method of securing my system, obviously just literally from prevent anyone from gaining access, either inside or outside. Because the main reason why I'm asking this is because I recently got invited to beta test the game program, obviously for some contacts on it, like a friend I know. And the thing is, I've had to sign a non-disclosure agreement, so I can't really talk about it. But I just need to know what's the best way of securing, obviously.
All right, well, we're going to take a break for news at the top of the hour. Keep listening, and I will tell you everything I know when we return. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today, if you're looking for work, brought to you by ZipRecruiter.com. If you're looking for employees, even better. ZipRecruiter.com puts your job posting on 50-plus job boards with a single click of the mouse. Find out more at ZipRecruiter.com/techguy. ZipRecr. I'm saying it as I type it in. UITER.com/TECHUI. If I say it out loud, maybe I'll type it right. I'm so bad with this. Are you hiring? You know where to post your job to find the best candidates? That's, after all, that's the whole point, isn't it? But trust me, we use ZipRecruiter because it's so hard to find people. And there's so many job boards, and you don't know which one's going to give you the best candidates. If you're looking to fill a position fast with perfect candidates, you need to post your job on all of the big sites. And ZipRecruiter will do that with a single click. Not just that, they'll post your job on social networks like LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. You can add your company logo and colors so your job pages will look like, you know, your business. Add unlimited users to your account. Create an instant job page on your website. Include a company careers page to use as a careers link. You post once and you watch the qualified candidates roll into their easy-to-use interface. ZipRecruiter.com even automatically highlights the best candidates. This is really great. You screen them, you rate them, then you hire the right person fast. Try ZipRecruiter. Find out why they've been used by over 100,000 businesses, including Twit. Right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for a free 4-day trial by going to ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. It's so fast, 4 days might be enough. ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy, and we thank them so much for their support of our Tech Guy podcast. Couldn't do it without them. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. We're talking computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. Most importantly, remember the website, because everything's there. The number, the link to the chat room, all the show notes from every show, audio and video, too, all at techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. So right before the break at the top of the hour, we had a call from the UK. He wanted to know how to secure his computer. Now, he had a specific issue. He was going to be using a new game, and he had to sign, you know, non-disclaimers that anybody would be able to see the game or anything about it. But really, this is something everybody needs to know, how to secure your computer. And it's true, what we're going to tell you is true for any kind of computer, Windows, Mac, or Linux. We'll focus a little bit on Windows. But I want to introduce a special guest. Robert Ballesser is a Jesuit priest, Society of Jesus. He is also an expert on IT and is a host of a couple of shows on our podcast network. He hosts This Week in Enterprise Tech, where he does a lot about securing networks and so forth. He also hosts a show called Know How, which is a great show that shows you how to do stuff, including securing your system. And his newest show is Coding 101, teaches you how to write software. So it's great to have Robert on the line. Father Robert, great to have you.
Oh, thanks, Leo. Thanks for having me.
Now, the very first thing we mentioned, we were talking about this before we went on, is a study that I just saw. Our other security expert, Steve Gibson, mentioned this. Fascinating study. Turns out 92% of all of the malware attacks that Microsoft patched Windows for last year, 92% of them, 100% of all the attacks through Internet Explorer, could be fixed by one single act, could be prevented by one single act that each and every one of you can do right now. So important. And I haven't taken this very seriously. I didn't until my Windows 7 machine got corrupted. We have an 11-year-old, and he, of course, was downloading software. And he called me. He said, can you come in here? My computer's calving. I said, what's that? He said, well, there's all these windows popping up on the screen. The kids, even 11-year-olds, no, they have a term for it when they've seen this pop-up storm that happens on the screen. And it's because he had, I found, about 10 different adware programs installed just by going to one download site and using download.com. So I was able to remove all those and clean it up. And then I did the one thing that everybody needs to do right now. I had been allowing him to run in administrator mode. Run as a limited user, and none of this will happen. So what you do is immediately you create right now an administrator account with a different password, and you don't use that account unless you need to install software, run updates, that kind of thing. And then you change your current account, the one you use day-to-day, to a limited user account. On the Macintosh, it's called a standard user. Never run as an administrator. Is that right, Robert? You agree with that?
Absolutely. That's the dirty secret of IT. When we talk about IT, enterprise IT security, we spend millions, billions of dollars each year to secure our networks when IT people know full well that the number one cause for all the bad stuff that happens on your network is you. It's the user. So So if you could take yourself out of that equation, if you could somehow set your computer so that you can't do anything bad, well, then you don't need all that extra hardware and those billions of dollars worth of networking gear and the rickrack that goes into your rack.
It's so simple, and I, you know, I'm kicking myself for not doing it. It's inconvenient because, of course, you have to be an administrator to install things and so forth. But you don't want to install things. That's the whole point, because it's sometimes it's malware that you're installing.
Right, right. And we get so caught up in buying the next thing because someone's always willing to offer us that new piece of hardware that's so different than every other piece of hardware that has ever been released. And this is the new shiny thing that will make sure that your computer doesn't get infected and your network stays clean. But ultimately, it comes down to what we call digital hygiene. Are you taking care of what you do on the internet? And the first step is to put your computer into a mode where it can't get affected. And of course, that's taking away the administrator privileges.
Yeah. What else can we do? What else should our caller do to protect himself? I mean, obviously, you could get offline. That would protect you. But that's a little...
Yeah, you could unplug your computer, wrap it in some bubble tape, and throw it into a closet. And yeah, you'd be fine. It's not all that useful. But the other things that he could try... And that, let's put digital hygiene at the bottom, because we all know that we don't like changing what we do. So let's look at what you could change in your network. The first thing, of course, is to have a router. There are still some people, believe it or not, who have their cable modems or their DSL modems plugged straight into their computers. And that's suicide. That's essentially giving the outside world free access to your computer. Please don't do that. That's just silly. But it goes beyond router. If you do have a router, or if you have one of those modems that has a router built in, that in and of itself isn't safe. What I would recommend is you go to Steve Gibson's website. And Leo, I believe you have the website for that, right?
GRC.com.
Absolutely. You go there and you run an application he's created called Shields Up, which will test your connection from the outside to tell you if you have any open ports. Do you have any parts of your router, of your network, that are leaking information or are open to attack from the outside world? The next step, and this goes almost into changing our behaviors, but not quite, is patching. Patch, patch, patch. I don't care if you've got a Windows machine, a Linux machine, or a Mac. If there's an update, run it. I know it's annoying when you get those little pop-ups. I know you hate having to do Patch Tuesday, but not patching is the same thing as inviting people to hack your computer. Now, because imagine this. When Microsoft releases a patch, every hacker in the world is going to take that patch and backwards engineer it to figure out what was wrong. Why did they need to release this patch? Which means that if you don't use that patch, your computer now becomes the prime target for each and every single one of those hackers. At least, I mean, I'm not saying I would do that, but if I were still doing my gray hat stuff, I'd...
Wait a minute. You were a hacker? Robert Ballister, the digital never, Jesuit? Never. You were a hacker?
Well, I wasn't always a priest, Leo. So.
Yeah. Wow, you have a few sins to account for here.
Yes, that's why I'm now in the digital monastery.
No, but it's really true. The bad guys are looking for these patches, and it's a clue to them where to look.
Absolutely. Right, right. Because every time they release a patch, and again, not just Microsoft, any software vendor that releases a patch, they're telling the people looking for exploits, this was something that we thought was important enough to plug.
Right.
So if you don't run that patch, they know your computer is now open to that particular exploit.
Right. Right. In fact, that's why we're worried about April 8th. That's going to be the last day Microsoft offers any fixes for Windows XP. After that date, if you're still using Windows XP, every Microsoft Patch Tuesday is, in effect, an announcement to hackers. Here's another flaw we're not going to fix on Windows XP.
Absolutely. And I know you've covered this, Leo, but on that date, right now, there are armies, there are hordes of hackers, of exploit masters, who are saving up their exploits because they realize if they use it now, it will probably get patched in a couple of weeks, and it'll be limited use. If they wait until that cutoff date, they have a blank check to use that exploit forever.
Well, they're never going to fix it again. By the way, it's not just Windows you got to patch. Hackers know now Windows is pretty secure, so they go after Adobe Reader. They go after Java from Oracle. They go after Adobe Flash. The things you use on the internet with your browser, those need to be regularly patched as well.
Right. Now, Leo, there's one thing that neither of us have mentioned that's actually really important. And that's digital hygiene.
I wash my hands frequently.
Yeah. Well, do you wash your keyboard? That's the more important question.
No, it's disgusting.
A little bit about it.
You're not talking about keyboard washing, I hope.
Oh, no. Although, you really should do that. I mean, if you've ever turned your keyboard upside down, it's disgusting. Ridiculous. Oh, horrible. No, but you talked a little bit about it, not running as administrator. That's a good first step.
Yeah.
But digital hygiene means doing the things you need to do online to be at the least risk. And again, it's changing behavior. So this is always at the end of the things that we can do to protect ourselves. People don't like not opening attachments from people they know. People don't like clicking on a website that comes to them in email.
Yeah.
People don't like going to a website they think is perfectly fine.
Robert, we're out of time. I got to run. You are the greatest. Robert Ballesteir, Father Robert Ballesteir. We'll have a little more after we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The tech lobster. 8888-ASK. Leo, thanks so much to Father Robert Ballesteir, the host of this week in Enterprise Tech, for dialing in on his Sunday to tell us a little bit about how to protect yourself. All important stuff. That digital hygiene, it really is key. It's often the case that, the bottom line is, for a bad guy to get under your system, there's two ways. If the bad guy's sophisticated, ultimately he's got to run some software on your computer, right? He's got to run a program that modifies your system. That's not done any other way but running a program. And there's two ways to do that. If he's really sophisticated, he can find a flaw in Windows or, Reader or Flash or something that can do that for him without your intervention. That's the most dangerous. You go to a website, and without you doing anything, the bad guy's on your system. And that's why we talk about patches being so important, because almost always that's what those patches are fixing, is the potential for a bad guy, without warning, without intervention, to modify your system. But assuming you're patching regularly, and I hope you are by now, Windows does it automatically unless you turn it off, and increasingly Flash, Adobe Reader, Java are doing automatic updates as well. They realize that's a problem for them too. So as long as that software is being kept up to date, any software that goes online basically needs to be kept up to date religiously. Assuming you're doing that, then the other path, the other route, is to get you, to trick you into doing something, to agreeing, to actually running a program. And that's, we call that often social engineering. That's where you go to, you hack somebody's Facebook page. This is very frequently a problem. That person then sends out to everybody he or she knows on Facebook a little message saying, "You won't believe, I've gotten this. You won't believe what you did last night. I've got video right here." And every one of his Facebook friends says, "Well, that's Joe. I know Joe. I don't remember doing anything last night. Wait, better check what he's talking about." what is it? What is he talking about? So you click the link. Okay, that's the problem right there, number one. That's that digital hygiene Father Robert was talking about. You click that link, you've fallen for it. So you'd click the link, and it will bring you to a site that looks exactly, in some cases, exactly like YouTube, right? Oh, well, that's where I'd expect to see this video, on YouTube, right? But then YouTube says something you see all the time. Your Flash isn't up to date. Download and install it. And you say, well, that seems to happen every week. It's a pain, but I guess I will. The problem is, it's not YouTube. It's not Flash. You're downloading and installing and running a program from a bad guy. It looks just like Flash. You still don't get that video. It says, oh, there's an error. And because this happens so much, you go, well, I guess there was an error. And you go back to your day-to-day routine, except the bad guy did get something on your system because you ran a program for him. He tricked you into it. Robert mentioned email attachments. Same thing. This is a very popular way of spreading viruses. It's changed. It's not because of, again, Microsoft and others have changed how email works. Google Mail, Microsoft, Outlook won't let you open attachments that have executables. They try to block this behavior. But you get an attachment. Remember the Anna Kournikova virus? The email. It would come from a friend, because a friend was hacked before you. And it would come from a friend and it would say, "Hey, I got these great pictures of Anna Kournikova. You won't believe them." And it's what looks like a zip file. You double-click it, you open it. It wasn't a zip file. You double-clicked it and you opened it. What you did is you ran a program. you think, oh, nobody would fall for that, except that people are by the hundreds of thousands for something called CryptoLocker. CryptoLocker comes in an email attachment. It looks like it's a PDF. It's not. It's a file named, you know, email.pdf.exe. You run it. And it often says things, for instance, here's a very common one. Would you fall for this? You get an email from your bank saying, we've just received a wire transfer on your behalf. You need to open this PDF, sign it, and send it back to us so we can put the money in your account. Oh, yeah, I'll take it. Thank you. Except it isn't a PDF. You don't look closely enough. You double-click it and run it. It's CryptoLocker. And then what does CryptoLocker do? Oh, this is a nasty one. It then encrypts all the files, all the programs, not the programs, all the data on your computer. And it encrypts it well with strong encryption. And then it puts up a message on your computer that says, your files are encrypted. You have 3 days to send us $100. Actually, it's more now. If you do that in 3 days, we'll send you the key and you can unencrypt it. If you don't, we're deleting the key and you will never be able to restore your files, ever. This is very effective blackmail. Very effective. And it's not fake, by the way. This is real. They did, in fact, encrypt your files by running that, what you thought was a PDF. You allowed them to do that. And the only recourse is to either give them money or say goodbye to your files. Now, if you have a good backup, you're okay, but... Apparently, the Swansea, Massachusetts Police Department didn't have a good backup. They paid. More and more people are getting bit by CryptoLocker. It's estimated that the CryptoLocker bad guys have made now hundreds of millions of dollars. So this is real. This isn't made up. It first surfaced September of last year. This is a new one. This is not old. And it's been coming and going because people get wise and then they use other tricks. It's pretty serious stuff. So I think, you know, digital hygiene, as Robert called it, that's really the key. Knowing, you know, you are the biggest risk. In December 2013, ZDNet traced four Bitcoin addresses posted by users who'd been affected by CryptoLocker. You can pay in Bitcoin. The four addresses showed a value of $27 million had been transferred into those accounts by people bit by CryptoLocker. And that's just one. Just one. Amazing. I think if you do those things, though, you're in pretty good shape. People are now in the chat room saying, well, what about Secunia and other, you know, testing software, antivirus software, and so forth. All of that stuff's useful, you know, as belt and suspenders. But really, you do these things, and that becomes less important. Microsoft does update its malware removal tool every month and automatically runs a scan. You may not know that, but during Patch Tuesdays on Windows every month, that's happening. And you can, in other words, you have some good stuff on your system already. I do recommend Microsoft Security Essentials. If you have Windows 8, you already have that too. But those things are not going to protect you if you do dumb things. Because always computers assume, well, the user is doing this on purpose. And that's why telling the computer not to let you by running as a limited user is so valuable. It protects you against yourself. John Bellflower, is it Washington? Hi, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hey, John. I'm sorry, Joe.
Yeah, this is Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah, I got my computer. I guess it's pretty filled up and it's running slow. And I was just, and there's this, I guess through HP, they had a subcontractor.
Hold on a sec. We're going to take a break when we come back. Speeding up your computer without using subcontractors. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by our phone system. That's a crazy idea. But really, you know, we love our phone system here at the Brick House. When I built this beautiful new studio, our 10,000-square-foot studio, we didn't have a phone system. In fact, we were moving from the little cottage. We only had maybe 10 employees. We didn't need a phone system. But it became apparent that we really couldn't make our employees continue to use their cell phones for business. So we asked around. Our IT guy, the great Russell Tammany of Exponentia Systems, said, I've installed RingCentral on a number of client systems. He loves it. So we took a chance. I have to say, I'm focused on the cloud anyway. I mean, I believe in cloud services. I like the idea of not having a PBX in the basement and, you know, paying a service contract and all of that stuff. RingCentral has no startup costs. It's as little as $25 a month per user, and that includes a lot of call minutes and all sorts of additional features, things like faxes in your email inbox. You can fax in and out from your computer. The smartphone apps are really great. The RingCentral smartphone apps mean you can use your cell phone as if it's your office phone. The caller ID will be the office number. You can even send texts from the office number and receive texts from the office number. Your voicemail, of course, goes to your desk, but it will also go to your smartphone and your email. There's an auto receptionist. So if you call our 800 number, you'll get our auto receptionist a greeting. It's in my voice. I am the auto receptionist. It'll announce employees and department extensions. They've even added, it's nice. That's one of the reasons I like cloud services. They can add services. They've even added meetings now. Face-to-face meetings in high def. You can share your desktop or documents with anyone, anytime, anywhere, on any device. That's all part of the RingCentral plan. I think this is just amazing. You can try it free right now. In fact, we've got a special deal, 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to a total of 20 phones. We have a number just for you, our listeners, 800-543-9980. 800-543-9980, or just go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. So many nice services. We've been very happy with RingCentral. Here we are more than almost 2.5 years in and not one problem. And I love not having to get the phone from the phone company, I have to say. Ringcentral.com. Use our offer code TWIT or call 800-543-9980. 8888 Ask Leo. That's number. Normally, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, would join us. He has the week off today, so we're going to go right back to the phones. Joe was talking to us from Bellflower. You said your computer's gotten slow, and you want to buy an HP cleanup program. First of all, make sure it's really from HP, okay? Because as you know, if you listen to this show, there are people making the rounds, calling you up, saying, I'm calling from Microsoft or other companies that sound reliable, and we see a problem on the network with your computer, we'd like to fix it. And of course, those guys are bad guys. Microsoft and HP do not call your home.
No, I called HP because I had a printer problem. But anyway, they said your computer's running slow.
They're trying to sell you something, too. Don't buy it.
Yeah.
There's no magic. You see it on the ads on the TV for these programs, too. Clean your PC. It suddenly runs like lightning. No.
Yeah.
No. It would be nice if I could just run a little program and like a gasoline additive and just, clean my cylinders. But I'm afraid that doesn't work. So there's a couple of things. Often the reason a computer is running slow is not anything that's on the computer, but the hard drive itself is getting a little less reliable. When a hard drive sector is hard to read, the computer will not give up immediately. It'll try a few times. And if the second or third time works, it says good and continues on without error, without notice, without warning, and tries the next sector. Maybe takes three times to read. It doesn't take long before you can see the computer will be three times slower just because your hard drive's a little flaky.
Okay.
So that's the first thing to look at is a hard drive that is less than reliable. Another reason sometimes computers get slow is malware. If you get malware on there, they're doing their job while you're trying to do yours. That can slow you down. And also fairly frequently, just the fact that we've used, sometimes they call it bit rot, the fact that we've used these computers for several years, we've installed and uninstalled and installed and uninstalled programs, that can just slow it down. So generally the best hygiene, and I do this at least yearly, is to just wipe the drive and start over. Reinstall your apps, only install the apps you need, reinstall Windows. This will have the side effect of cleaning out your registry, but also all the temp files and the cruft. And if you do a low-level format on the hard drive at the same time, That will also kind of refresh the drive, and it does fix a multitude of errors. Sometimes you need to buy a new drive, but sometimes just rewriting everything makes it all better. So that's the first thing to do. You can use a program to see if there's a lot of stuff running in the background. If you feel like, you know, I know my hard drive's fine. I know I'm not running, you know, I haven't been installing a lot of software. Maybe it's some malware. You can look at what's running in the background. The task manager will show you if you want something a little more sophisticated. Microsoft has a couple of programs from its sysinternals division, like auto runs, that will tell you, you know, what's starting up when the computer starts up and so forth. Just Google sysinternals and you'll see a whole list of free software. And that's coming from Microsoft, so you know it's good stuff. I think these are very – Process Explorer will tell you what's running in the background, even more useful than Task Manager. Same kind of idea. Auto runs, even more useful than the auto run, the auto startup program. These are really great, and they keep them up to date.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah, try that stuff before you pay HP $160 for something of dubious value. What they're probably selling you is a program like CCleaner, which isn't a bad program, but I think it's – you know, it's kind of like a teenager that doesn't clean out its room, and then mom gives him a bottle of Febreze and says, just spray everything. That's not really solving the problem. It's cosmetic. And CCleaner is basically the Febreze for your hard drive. It's not a bad thing. It will delete temp files, cache files that slow you down. It will perhaps clean up your registry, although registry cleaning is a little bit of a voodoo thing. You can't do it too well or your computer stops working. So I really think of programs like CCleaner is a good program, you know, and you can try it free and so forth. It's not a bad thing. Piriform, the company that makes it, isn't an evil company. I'm not saying that by any means, but it is kind of digital Febreze. Much, much better to really clean the room. And find the old pizza crust underneath the unwashed jeans. That's really better to get the source of the stuff. Just my suggestion. Richard in Crawley, also in the UK. Hi, Richard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, hi, Leo. Love the show.
Thank you.
I wonder if you can help. I'm trying to back up about 300 gigs of data.
That's a lot of data.
Well, it's about 12 years of photos equates to about 200 gig and sort of home videos.
Yeah, so you don't want to lose it.
No, I'm currently using Dropbox, which is costing sort of $50 a month.
Yeah, too much, yeah.
Yeah, I've tried the Amazon solution.
Amazon has something that might be a little bit better for something like this. You're trying to do cloud storage, and I agree. The problem is as the files get bigger, you know, you start to get to the point where it takes so long to upload it that it's not worth it.
Well, yeah, that's the other problem. I tried Carbonite, and some of the files are too big.
Well, you can force Carbonite to back them up, but you know your upstream bandwidth is going to be the issue. So my suggestion is first make a local hard. You know, you can get a terabyte hard drive cheap. Back everything up to that. If you want to get it off-site, get two. Bring one to work, leave one at home. There is an Amazon storage system called Glacier that is designed for people who want to back up a lot of data but don't want to spend a lot of money. Glacier is as little as a penny a gigabyte per month.
Really?
Yeah, so we're talking $3 a month for you. But what they do with Glacier is it's slow to restore. That's why they call it Glacier. It's optimized for data that's infrequently accessed and for which retrieval times of several hours are suitable, says Amazon. The idea being you might have 300 gigabytes or more that you want to back up. You don't, it's really just backup. You probably don't ever want to access it. You're not going to, it's not like you're using S3, and the problem with S3 is it's designed to be always available.
I'm using about 50 gigs for accessing it.
It's expensive. You pay not only for the storage, but you pay for the bandwidth to upload.
Yeah, well, that's not a problem because I've got a really good unlimited account in the UK. And
no, but you pay Amazon. They also charge you for bandwidth.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah.
So you recommend this Glacier thing for the photos?
I'd look at it. Again, remember that part of the problem is not merely how much it costs to save this stuff. And by the way, Carbonite is it's cheaper than this even because it's flat rate for unlimited amount. It's how long is it going to take you to upload 300 gigabytes?
Well, it normally takes me pretty much the best part of a day and a half.
Well, that's pretty good. I'm surprised because you must have a very fast connection because all you have to do is do the math. Most people in the U.S., for instance, have a megabit upstream. It's your upstream connection that counts. And it wouldn't, a megabit upstream, remember, it's not going to use all of it. Otherwise, it would knock you offline. So let's say it's 500 kilobits at best. That's 500 kilobits a second.
Megabyte upload.
Yeah, you've got a lot faster.
Download.
Yeah. So if you have, that's unusual in the U.S., if you have that kind of bandwidth upstream, then I think Glacier would be a very good choice. I think for a lot of people in the U.S., it's just not practical to upload 300 gigabytes. 50 gigabytes is fine, but 300 is like, that's going to take, literally, it's going to take a month.
I think that's what I'll do. I'll try this Glacier for the photos.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. It's as little as a penny a gigabyte a month, which means pretty inexpensive. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Phone number 888-827-5536. That's 8888-ASK. Leo, we were talking about backing up to the cloud. And, of course, our sponsor, Carbonite, is one of the companies that does this. But there are a great many that do it. And the most important thing to understand is it's not a good solution for vast amounts of data, not because of the service you use. This is true for all services, including Amazon's Glacier, but because of your upstream bandwidth. And most people, I think, overestimate the amount of bandwidth they have. Speed tests, if you run a speed test, will tell you how much burst bandwidth you have, how much bandwidth you have for a few seconds. But what you really want to know is how much upstream, because you're uploading this, right? How much upload capacity do you have sustained? That is day in, day out. And it's lots less than you think. For one thing, no upload service can use all of your upstream bandwidth. It would take you offline. In fact, they usually use a small fraction of it because they don't want to impede your use of the internet. That makes sense, right? You're not going to use an online backup service if everything else gets slow. So it's not unreasonable to assume that perhaps you're doing, and I think this is fairly typical in the U.S. anyway, around 2,000 bits per second or 200,000 bits per second, 2 kilobits per second. You might say, well, wait a minute, Comcast is giving me 5 megabits upload per second. Yeah, but I guarantee you it's not sustained. That's maximum, first of all. They always say up to, right? It's not sustained. Your speed test only shows you bursts. And, of course, no service is going to use all of your upstream bandwidth. So it's not unreasonable to say somewhere around, I think, 200 kilobits per second. That translates to around 2 gigabytes. The maximum you could upload is 2 gigabytes a day. So our caller who had 300 gigabytes worth of data, it would take him 150 days just to back that up. 5 months. It's not practicable, in other words. Now, he says he had a lot more bandwidth, and I certainly would try it. One of the reasons when we do our Carbonite ads, we tell you try before you buy is to see how much your throughput is in the real-world situation where you're using it. And from that, you'll be able to determine how much is reasonable. I'd say, generally speaking, for most people, if you're using cloud storage of any kind, you want to 10 gigabytes is more reasonable, 20 gigabytes, not hundreds of gigabytes, and certainly not terabytes of data. For a lot of data like that, you should do what our friends next door do. We have we sublet to Pixelcore, which does video production. And if you go down in the basement here at our studios, they have racks and racks of hard drives wrapped in bubble wrap. That's how they back up. they take the video production drive and they pull it out of the computer and they wrap it in bubble wrap and they put it in the dark and they leave it there. Not perfect by any means, but for the kinds of data that they need to back up, the terabytes of data they need to back up, it's the only practical solution. I think in most cases, most of us do not have enough upstream bandwidth to back up huge amounts. So you should just, you know, you should almost always just back up documents, stuff that's fairly small. If you have giant video files, back them up to a hard drive. And then take that hard drive to work. Things like that. Lots faster. And certainly, you know, more practical solution. Our show today, and we're going to get back to the phones in a second. I got Derek on the line just up the road a piece. He's from Petaluma, right where we are. He says Chrome's not working for him, the Google browser. We'll talk about that. But first, let's talk about Squarespace.com. Simply the best place to make your own website without knowing any magic code like JavaScript or CSS or even HTML. You don't need to know that. Why would you want to know that? Do you want to become a webmaster or have a site for your business or your personal blog? You're more interested in the content, I would assume. Squarespace is perfect for your business, your personal brand, or an online store, all with just a few clicks. Plus, every Squarespace site is gorgeous, unique, and most importantly, modern, because they spend a lot of energy with their designers to make sure that their templates start you with the latest, greatest stuff. Mobile responsive design, HTML5. E-commerce is built into every single site if you need it. They make their stuff work beautifully. You can try it free for 14 days. Squarespace.com. Just click the Get Started button. If you decide to buy, use the upgrade code Leo and you'll get 10% off. Squarespace is hosting, does it all for you. Comes the software, and when you register for a year, sign up for a year, you get a free domain name. They take care of all the tech stuff so you can focus on what you care about, your content, your life, your business. Squarespace also has great 24/7 award-winning customer service right from the offices in New York. It's the people who actually work at Squarespace, so you're going to get great information, great help. And best of all, this all starts at $8 a month. $8, website, hosting, customer service, the domain name when you sign up for a year. Start a free trial there. You don't need a credit card. Just click the Get Started button. When you decide you want to buy, use my name, Leo. You'll get 10% off. Squarespace.com/Leo. Squarespace.com/Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Derek in Petaluma. Hi, Derek.
Hi, Leo. Hey, big time fan, long time listener.
Have you come by our studio ever?
Oh, I say hi to you every time I go to Petaluma Market or Hallie's.
Yeah, we're right across the street. You just pop in and say hi. That's great.
I will. I got a problem with Chrome.
All right.
Okay. Just this last week, all of a sudden, when I take a video in Chrome and go to full screen,
yeah,
it goes into a three-quarter screen up in the left-hand corner, and the sound is slightly out of sync.
Yeah, that seems wrong. Are you on Windows or a Mac?
I'm on a Windows XP.
My XP, huh? And yeah, you are keeping your Chrome up to date. You know, Chrome is Google's browser. It updates automatically, but sometimes you might want to just kick it in the pants a little bit. If you go to help, I think it's help, it'll show about your Google Chrome, what version number you're using, and you're looking for that green checkbox that says Google Chrome is up to date. Make sure it is up to date.
Okay, well, just to make sure, I downloaded another copy of Chrome.
Okay, that'll do it.
Should have been the new one, and it does the same thing. Now, okay. There's one or two videos that will run full screen still. Before this week, all the videos ran full screen if you just clicked on the full screen mode.
The other thing I would do is look at extensions. So if you go to the Chrome settings, you'll see a tools entry. Go in there and look at all the extensions that are installed and make sure you don't have any oddball extensions installed for video that might be getting in the way. Chrome extensions are great. They're really a nice feature, but it's possible to install something that can add a problem to it. Chrome installs its own version of Flash. I presume that these are Flash videos. What site are you trying?
I would imagine they're Flash. Yeah.
What site are you trying to run? Is it all video every time? If you go to YouTube, for instance, does it happen there?
No, if I go to YouTube, it happens there.
Okay.
But in Chrome. But if I go to Internet Explorer or
right.
Safari,
but understand Chrome uses its own version of Flash. It's built into Chrome, unlike any of the other browsers. It could be the Flash is not behaving properly. I would check your video driver to make sure that sometimes older machines there's an issue with video. In fact, in the XP days, we used to do something odd with the video because the older machines couldn't keep up with high-quality video. We would blast it right into the video memory, and it was called hardware acceleration. And that may be causing a problem for Chrome because, of course, it's a lot more modern. I would look in your video driver, you know, go into your control panel and look at your video card drivers and make sure hardware acceleration is disabled.
Oh, it's disabled. Okay, I'll try that.
Yeah, you'd think you'd want that, but actually it's a little bit of a misnomer. What hardware acceleration did is effectively bypassed the operating system and blasted the video into the card. That could be causing a problem with Chrome. So there's a number of things it could be. If it's working fine on other browsers, it sounds like it's possible to work fine. But I would make sure that, you know, as long as you're using YouTube and it can't go full screen, there definitely is something wrong here. I'm just those are a couple of things to try. Make sure you have the latest video drivers for your XP machine. You probably do. I doubt anybody's updated those drivers in a while. And disable video acceleration. See if that helps. Here's a good suggestion from Killer BG in our chat room. Go to the control panel, click the flash icon, and delete cache. Start over. Clean your flash cache. Flash stores a lot of the data cache. That could be causing problems. You did install a new version of Chrome. That's a good idea. Those are all the things I can think of. See if any of those help. Appreciate it, Derek. And if anybody's got a suggestion, techguylabs.com. You can add it to the comments. That's certainly a good way to help. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Hour 3 of the Tech Guy program. The last hour before we say goodbye to Heather Hammon. She's going off to Africa.
Potentially forever.
Well, you never know. If you do one of those selfies with a lion and he takes umbrage.
Umbrage.
Lion umbrage is not something you want to see.
I know. I don't know why. I think lions love me.
I know. They're just big cats. Do you have kitty cats? I mean, they're just big kitty cats.
No, but I'm a Leo, so I feel like I have some kind of kinship.
and you work with Leo, so just tell the lion that.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll be glad to pose for a selfie. Say, but I'm putting it on Facebook. I'm sure he'll be glad.
I'm going to get you lots of followers, don't you see?
speaking of followers, who should we put on the air here?
Yes, a follower of yours, Mike in Bitterroot Valley.
Wow. Hi, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Heather.
Well, howdy, Leo. How you doing, partner?
I'm well, partner. Are you a cowboy there in Bitterroot Valley?
Well, not anymore. When I was younger, I did, but I'm getting too old for that kind of stuff.
Oh, Montana's such a beautiful state.
Well, you know, we got snow up to the belly of a tall milk cow right now.
Well, I'm glad I'm not a tall milk cow then.
There you go.
Yeah. I don't want snow on my belly.
Maybe Heather'd take me to Africa where it's warm.
Oh, I know. I know. And the cows are dangerous.
Well,
what? What can I do for you, Rancher Mike?
Well, Leo, I've been using phones since before the bag phone and before the the brick phone. So
We
used to use an Omnicom system where you call a gal and then she, you know, gets you and you call back type thing.
Wow. Yeah, I remember those. Those were very fancy people had those. You must be a fancy person.
Oh, yeah, by golly, I sure am. I'm thinking about stepping into the 20th century here and getting one of those smartphones, but there's so damn many of them, I don't know that much about them, and I'm looking for one that's durable, and I got an old 59 Caddy I'm going to start taking pictures of because it's almost finished.
Oh, that's awesome.
I want a good phone, you know?
Oh, that's awesome. Now, the simplest, believe it or not, first of all, you're going to have to choose a cell carrier that works where you are and works where you go, and I don't know who that is. Who's your cell company out there?
Well, it looks like Verizon is about the best in our area.
That's good. All right. Verizon does give you some good choices. A lot of times for people when they're getting their first smartphone, I make a contrarian recommendation.
Right.
You know, almost everybody in the world, certainly everybody in the U.S., uses either an iPhone or a Samsung phone. an Android phone from Samsung. Those are certainly the most popular. You can't really go wrong. But I think for the first-time smartphone, Windows Phone is a great choice. A lot of people kind of ignore Windows Phone, but I think they've done a very nice job of making it easy to use. The reason a lot of people don't use Windows Phone is because they're used to the variety of applications available on iPhones and Android phones, and they get to Windows Phone, they say, well, where's my Instagram? Or where, you know, they're looking for that particular app. But see, you won't have that problem because as long as it's got a good camera. And now, do you use a computer at home?
You know, I use a computer in my work. But,
and is it a Windows machine?
It's an Apple.
All right. If it's an Apple, I'm gonna suggest probably an iPhone then.
Well, you know, I'm not going to use the computer on a partner. I want something that's geezerized.
The Nokia Lumia, if you can get to a Verizon store, I would go and look at them because you want to physically hold them if you can. But the Nokia Lumia, in your case, it'll be the 928. That's the Verizon model. Has a great camera. 928 has a great camera. Is a smartphone, very easy to use. I think it's a great phone. And it's a little bit kind of out in the boonies there, like you are, because everybody's using iPhones and Android phones. But I think it's a great phone. Now, they also just got the Lumia Icon, which is also a nice phone and perhaps even better camera. It's got a 20 megapixel camera, really nice. This just came in, and it's a really nice phone.
A Nokia Lumia Icon.
Icon, the Lumia Lumia Icon. I would take a look at that, and then you probably should look at an iPhone. The Icon screen is much bigger, much easier to use for us geezers.
Yep.
It's got the best, really the best camera, phenomenal camera, and that sounds like something important to you.
That is real important, by the way. I sure appreciate your time, partner.
You're welcome. I think you'll enjoy it.
All right. If you ever don't get out this way, come by and visit with us.
I want to. Tell me about Bitterroot Valley. It sounds beautiful for some reason to me, even though the name sounds bitter.
Yeah, it's beautiful. On one side of the valley, we got tall mountains. On the other side, we got the short mountains, and we got a big old creek that runs right in the middle of it.
I bet there's some good fly fishing in that creek.
Come on down. We'll take you to some secret spots. I'll have to put a blindfold on you, though, because I can't see where they are.
Oh, I know. You guard those great fishing sites with your life. I understand.
We'll take you, though. You'll be all right. We'll be good to you.
All right. Well, I hope the creek don't rise when that snow melts and you have a wonderful spring. Thank you so much, Mike.
Sure, appreciate your time, Mike.
My pleasure. Take care. Those are good people out there. It's a beautiful state. Beautiful state. You know, people often say, Leo, Windows Phone? Really? I didn't expect that of you. But I think for brand new first-time smartphone users is a really good choice. It's not great for somebody coming from an iPhone or Android because you're going to say, hey, where's WhatsApp or whatever it is that you use? But I think especially the Icon is very robust. And he said camera, right? We're looking for a good camera. The best cameras, in my opinion, are on the iPhone and on these Lumia phones. And at 20 megapixels, that's significantly. That's three times more pixels than the iPhone. 8888, ask Leo. Midnight Rider. Where are you calling from, Midnight Rider?
Hi, Leo. Actually, I don't want to say because I work for the city.
Okay.
And I want to relay some. I talked to our IT person because most of our computers are Windows XP.
Yep.
And I had mentioned to her that the fact that after a certain date that they're not going to be supporting it anymore. And she was aware of that. And then she said, well, we have antivirus, so we don't have any.
Oh, Lord, oh, Lord, oh, Lord. And I bet you that city keeps a lot of important private data on those computer systems.
Most certainly.
I bet you they're online as well.
Most certainly.
Wow. But we have an antivirus, and so I don't worry. The antivirus will be kept up to date, by the way. Microsoft says it's going to update its own, and I'm sure all the, you know, ESET and all the third-party antiviruses will make darn sure to keep them up to date on XP because that is the only protection you have, but it doesn't protect you against user error. An antivirus is going to let a user install software. It's not going to get in the way, and if that software happens to be vicious malware, That's your city could be bit by Crypto Locker. That would be embarrassing, wouldn't it?
Well, that's what I was trying to make them aware of, is the fact that once we got infected, I mean, it would go throughout the whole city, and who knows where it goes from there.
I understand. You know, cities, I'm thinking of Petaluma, we're broke. Cities, times are tough. If you're in California especially, you're not getting any help from the state anymore. And so getting new computers with newer operating systems is difficult, and probably not in the budget. But maybe it's time to go to the city manager and say, hey, you know, this is going to be a problem.
Yeah, it was funny. When I was first hired on with the city, I went in and they showed me, you know, these presses. And I thought, you know, that they were for, like, from the Smithsonian. And I said, they actually wanted us to run them. I'm saying, are you serious?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sympathetic. The city doesn't, you know, the city doesn't want to raise the tax base, you know, and it doesn't. It's doing the best it can. Really, the question is, can you run XP safely? And that's an interesting question these days. I think if it's on the network, you're running some risks. Let me talk about them when we come back. I appreciate the call. It's a great question. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Interesting question posed by our caller, Midnight Rider, from City Unknown. He works for a city that is still mostly or entirely XP. As we've mentioned before, our April 8th Windows XP goes to ends of life, end of life. That's what Microsoft calls it. What it means is Microsoft will stop fixing problems on Windows XP. And what I mean, the upshot of that is Windows XP becomes a security nightmare. And that any Windows XP machine connected to the internet is at grave risk. Now, I understand city government doesn't have a lot of money and probably can't afford to upgrade those XP machines. First thing to do, of course, would be to run, make sure that every one of those XP machines is running in standard user, limited user mode, not administrator mode. You might also, and she may, you know, when your IT professional said, we've got an antivirus, she may have also known and may not have said, and we're running behind a Barracuda or a Starro or some sort of secure firewall. That could help and be a lot less expensive. Run the network behind some security hardware. There's a lot of security hardware for IT that that would do some mitigation. By first of all, it's going to be updated, and it can block attacks into the network on XP machines. You'd need to make sure all the email was going through that, all the IM traffic, all of that stuff. You know, we talked a lot 15 years ago about the Y2K bug. It never was a problem, mostly because I think there was enough awareness of Y2K that people fixed their Y2K problems. But there was this great fear that it was going to be an apocalypse. I'm a little more afraid of April 8th. I think Y2XP is going to be a very big deal. And we won't see it April 9th, but we will start seeing it in April and May and June, and it's going to get worse throughout the summer because so many people are running Windows XP. A huge number of people running Windows XP out there. And in some cases at banks, on ATM machines. Oh, very good advice from Burke McQuinn and my staff, our engineer. He says, tell everybody not to use Internet Explorer. That'll help. You got to figure if they're running Windows XP, they're probably using IE6. That's terrible. Maybe that's something you can do, Midnight Rider. Just convince her, could you please use Chrome? Could you please use Google Chrome as your browser? Virginia Gal says, the city I work for upgraded all the computers on Windows XP to Windows 7 because of this April 8th EOL. It's tough. This is a tough one because I understand there's no money. And I also understand Microsoft's point of view. They can't support an operating system forever, or can they? Maybe they should. Yeah, I think they should, frankly. And I think they may. I wouldn't be surprised as this crisis comes closer and closer that Microsoft relents. Remember, they're doing most of the work anyway. Most of the patches they offer on these Patch Tuesdays affect all versions or most versions of Windows. So they're doing the work. In many cases, they're doing the work. And really, it wouldn't be a whole lot more work to make sure that XP gets patched. And it's not something Microsoft owes those individual users. It's not something Microsoft owes the internet, because those XP machines will become, you know, Typhoid Marys. They'll become carriers. They'll become viruses on the rest of the world. I understand that Microsoft, you know, feels reasonably that as a business, there comes a time, but they also have to understand they've put a lot of code out there. There's probably 100 million people using Windows XP out there who will suddenly become carriers. And that is not a good thing for the internet as a whole, for all of us. Gina's in Venice, California. Hi, Gina. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Let me take you off of... Hi.
Ah, now we hear the full rich tones of your voice coming through the automatic communications device.
Let's just go. I am a geezette.
Okay. I love that.
Yeah.
You don't need the et. You're a geek. Just a geek. Pure. No need to add an et. No diminutive here.
Okay. Well, here's the deal. Are you familiar with Familiar, the program Familiar?
I am not. Tell me about it.
It's now been bought over by somebody else, so it's no longer doing what it used to do.
Is it a genealogy program?
Well, you could take a picture on your telephone, and then when you connect to your computer, it would ask you if you wanted to upload the picture to Familiar. And then on the app, on your iPhone or whatever phone I have an iPhone, so I'm not sure what other platforms it was supported on. But you could invite people, so you could have just your family sharing photos.
Oh, and they're shutting down. I'm seeing they're shutting down, aren't they?
Yeah.
They were acquired by a company called Taser International, and they're going to be change Familiar to work instead of for families, for law enforcement. So goodbye, Familiar. Now, has Familiar offered you a way to get your photos out?
Well, they're there. I have them. They're actually the pictures that I've taken on.
They're still on your phone. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. There's I still have the web app where when I connect my iPhone, Familiar would come up and it'll ask me if I want to add a photo. But I've since stopped doing that since it's not going anywhere.
Yeah. So the good news is, and one of the reasons I think Familiar sold out, is that there are lots of free ways to do this now.
Okay.
Facebook will do it for you, for instance, if you have the Facebook. I know you may not want to use Facebook, so I'm going to give you several other options. But
okay.
Facebook, if you have the Facebook app on your phone, you could turn on automatic upload of pictures. They're uploaded to a private album, and then you can share your album privately with family. I presume most of your family, in most cases, is on Facebook, too. That's a natural use for that. Microsoft offers a similar feature with it used to be called SkyDrive. Now it's called OneDrive. It, again, will automatically upload every picture you take, and then you can share them in albums to other folks. Google does this with its Google Plus app. In every case, though, unfortunately, the people you're sharing with have to have an account. They have to have a Google account or a Microsoft account or a Facebook account, and that, of course, is a little bit of a disadvantage.
So you can, on any of those alternatives you gave, you can take a picture on your phone and then...
It's automatically uploaded privately, so only you can see it,
to
their website. And you can then, say, make an album and share it with people. Apple even offers this with its PhotoStream. So it may be one of the reasons that PhotoStream has great family sharing. But again, that requires that your family be using a Mac or some other Apple solution. I'll talk about some non-proprietary solutions when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking with the geek, Gina. Not a geek at Gina. But she raises a lot of a question that really is going to come up more and more. When you use a service, in this case Familiar, but when you use any service, even Facebook, and you're putting your pictures up there, these are companies. They're commercial services that could at any time shut down. They could be sold. In this case, Familiar, which is a very popular photo sharing app on iOS and Android. I've done some research since you called, and they claim 100 million pictures stored there.
That's huge.
They were sold to a company that makes tasers. And they have a website called evidence.com that's used by law enforcement. And they're basically, my sense of it is that they want to take this photo sharing service that's been used by families and have it be used by law enforcement instead.
Hmm.
So while they haven't shut down yet, have they sent you a note saying they're going to?
No, I haven't heard anything.
I noticed that this sale happened in October, and they said at the time they were going to shut down. But I noticed they're still promoting the app. They're promoting the service. Their website says nothing about it. But it is an issue that will come up again and again, because at some point, I mean, maybe not for 100 years, but at some point, Facebook's going to fade away. So you should never trust any commercial service with your photos alone. You should always have multiple copies. Good news, you saved all your images.
Right.
And I would probably save them in another place, too.
Indeed. We have followed multiple suggestions you've offered. So we're
wonderful.
Yeah.
So, there are other apps that do similar things. Somebody in the chat room suggested Path. I love Path. I use Path all the time. Your family members, P-A-T-H. It's it's kind of, the idea is it's like a mini Facebook. You only share your pictures with people you allow to be your friends. That number is limited to 150. You'd have to get your family and friends to join Path.
Okay.
And then they can share pictures and you share pictures. And it's a wonderful way to share more than pictures, audio, video, text, stickers, and so forth. So
that sounds good.
Yeah, Path is a great app.
Okay.
Somebody's suggesting Keeps, K-E-E.P-S.
Okay.
It's currently free. It's K-E-E-P-S. It's Android, iOS. They also have a website. And as I mentioned, everybody and their brother is in this business, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Apple. Also, Dropbox. Dropbox will allow you to do this exact same thing and share albums of photos with family and friends. In unfortunately, the case of many, well, all of them, your family and friends have to have an account with one of these services.
Okay.
And that's kind of an issue. And there, of course, there's no guarantee that they will, and none of these services are going to last forever.
Certainly.
So never trust any one service.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think there are good alternatives. I'm looking at Familiar. I'd never heard of it, but after looking at it, it looks like a really great
it was.
Service, yeah.
It was, and now I still have it, but I can't.
We'll never know what she can't do. If I push the button, will she come? I see a red arrow. What does that mean? That's some mysterious symbol. Let me try it again. Are you there, Gina? What does that mean? You are still here. Good. That was weird. Okay. I'm sorry. Something magical happened with our system.
Oh, it was.
I think it was purchased by Taser Incorporated and turned into a law enforcement phone system.
There we go.
Okay. all back. So anyway, I'm glad you called. And I'm glad to be introduced to the service. It's not the first time this has happened. I used to put a lot of pictures up on a service called PicPlease, which was a competitor to Instagram, predated Instagram. But Instagram came along, boom, everybody started using them. Nobody used PicPlease anymore. And PicPlease went out of business a couple of months ago. And so unfortunately, I, on my blog, for instance, linked to pictures stored at PicPlease. I'm going to have to go back through that blog and hope that I copied those photos somewhere else. Camera phone images for me aren't that important, so I don't mind you losing them all. But, you probably do. Most people would. And so make sure you keep them in several different places. Nice to talk to you, Gina. Thanks for calling. Jack, Liverpool, our third caller from the UK today. I don't know what's going on. Hi, Jack.
I think it's a British invasion, isn't it?
I think that's what they call it. 50 years ago, the Beatles hit our shore, and now you guys.
Now it's me, Jack, yeah.
Nice to talk to you, Jack.
Yeah, so I've just got a quick question about I've got a MacBook. Now, the MacBook is fairly recent. It's only a 2012 model.
Uh-huh.
So it's got an i7 processor in it.
Very nice.
Now, the, the problem with it is, believe it or not, it's really quite a high-spec machine. But, you know, on the Mac, when you launch an app from the dock and it bounces.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I open Safari on my Mac, it can take about 20 or 30.
Oh, that's a lot of bounces. It should only be a few. You have an SSD in that Mac Pro, I'm guessing.
No. I was. My question was, do you think I've got a normal hard drive?
Ah, okay.
Do you think an SSD would improve it?
Absolutely. That's the way you get 20 bounces to 3, but 20 is too many. There's something else going on there besides that. But certainly putting an SSD in there would fix it. My guess is that the internal hard drive is starting to fail, and that's why it's slow. And this might be a very good time to put an SSD in there.
Yeah. I mean, when I've rang up the Apple support line, which have been really helpful, actually, and they've told me to create a new user on the system to see if it's a system-wide issue on OS X.
That's always a very good diagnostic thing to do on an Apple. What happened?
Well, I did create a new user, and it actually only took about, 4 or 5 bounces on the user. So if you got any idea what it could be?
Yeah. It's probably the cache. Make sure you reset Safari, clear all the data and settings in Safari. There's a command under the Safari menu, reset Safari. When you choose that command, you can check which things of it you want to reset. If it's taking 20 bounces, I would almost certainly guess that's because it's loading in cached data, cookies, and other information. So resetting that data, deleting everything you can afford to delete, is probably going to make a big difference. You have history, top sites, location warnings, and so forth. Remove all website data is probably the key one. That's the cache. I think getting rid of all of that stuff will make a big difference. You shouldn't have more than 2 or 3 bounces, frankly. 5, okay, but no more than that.
Yeah. I've actually done that quite a few times.
That didn't fix it.
No, I've got a few different apps as well from the App Store, which actually clear all the different caches out on different apps.
All right. Then the one other thing to do is look at your Safari extensions and temporarily remove all of those. That's also in the Safari menu. Extensions will have to all be loaded, right? And if one of them is slow to load, that's going to do it as well.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for that.
But a SSD, a solid-state drive, really speeds things up. Putting in a solid-state drive, solid-state drives are basically made out of flash memory, the same kind of stuff you put in your camera. And a good solid-state drive on a fast connection, on a fast bus, is 10 times faster than a spinning drive, or more. Modern Macintoshes, the new Mac Pro, the MacBook Air, the MacBook Pro with Retina display, put the SSD on the PCI Express bus, not the traditional disk drive bus, the SATA bus, and that means they're very fast. Whoosh! Really amazing. Don't recommend it on all computers. Older computers may not have enough speed to take advantage of an SSD. But certainly when you buy a new computer, you should absolutely look for an SSD. The cost is dropping quite a bit. They used to be very, very expensive. So you'd get a smaller drive for the same amount of money. But now the prices are dropping. You can get pretty good-sized SSDs for a lot less. Still more expensive than spinning drives, but I think worth it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, last segment of the week, Tech Guy Show, 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, that's what Bob in Warren, Pennsylvania called. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Leo.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Well, what can I do for you?
I've been listening to the conversation, and the subject's come up before a lot of times about running yourself as a limited user.
Right, right.
Now, with Windows 8, it's a little different.
I know. It's frustrating in all versions of Windows, and I understand why people don't do it. I didn't do it, and I regret it now. But
I've been around computers a lot of years, but over the last few years, things keep getting more hokey with viruses and stuff like that.
Here's what Windows should do, and I think you can set it up to do this. Apple does it right. So the whole issue is, should a user running the computer day-to-day have the privileges of an administrator, a root, a sysadmin? No, of course not. But there are times that one needs those privileges when you want to install software, for instance. Installing software in a system should be something only an administrator can do, not a regular user. But there should be a way to escalate or upgrade yourself to an administrator for those times you need it. If you're running as administrator, you correct me on 8, because I haven't played with this on 8. But if you're running as an administrator on 8 and you try to install software, UAC will launch. You'll get that special screen that right. says, do you sure you want to do this? And you click yes and you go on. On a Macintosh, and this is how Windows should do it, it says, are you sure you'd want to do this? If so, give me your password as administrator. And it's the same password as your login if you're an administrative user, but it asks you for a password. And I think that's sufficient warning to the user. What we're about to do has to have administrator privileges. A yes-no click box is just way too easy.
Right.
Now, I think you can, and people have told me you can continue as administrator, but tell UAC that you have to enter a password to upgrade. Is that the case?
Well, you can set your account as a standard user. And I heard some talk about going in and creating an administrator account before you do that to yourself. But there's already an account in Windows called administrator.
That's true. That actually is up to the OEM. That's not necessarily the case. But if you get a computer from Lenovo or Dell or HP, it will have that administrative user. But if you install Windows yourself, it won't necessarily. Okay. So you have to have at least one administrative user, obviously.
Oh, yeah. And I tried to create a non-Microsoft account, another account.
Yeah, OEMs are the ones that create that default administrator account.
Okay.
But so you may not have that if you did your own install of Windows. I would say if you can, and I'll try this on Windows 8 today after the show, but I would say if you can go into Windows 8 into user access control or user account control and say require administrative credentials before you do anything, I think that would be sufficient. That's what Apple does, and I think that that's sufficient. The problem is you don't want malware to silently do something only an administrator could do, like install itself.
Right.
And that's the big issue. Most, I remember the days of, Windows XP didn't want you to be a limited user. It didn't like it. You could hardly use it that way. And I would hope that it's gotten better, because that's the way to run. We all know that. So have you tried that? Well, actually, somebody's just put a tutorial up in the chat room, so I'm going to take a look at that from 7 Forms. We'll put this in the show notes on how to make UAC require a password. That's the right way to do it. Is this Windows 8 or some other version of Windows? I'm not sure, but it isn't. This is, of course, as usual, not easy. You have to go into local security policy and modify it, but you can do it. This is the kind of thing an IT guy should do. If you're setting up a computer for family, friends, kids, by all means, make them a limited user, and don't let them have administrative control. At least do this. At least turn this on. We'll put this link. It's fairly easy to do, but you have to know what you're doing. User account control really needs to be, turned up to 11. Very frustrating, though. I think that this isn't automatically doing this. And of course, there are flaws in software, Windows and Mac, that allow a bad guy to silently escalate himself to administrative user. But and in those cases, this doesn't work. But 92% of all the malware patched last year by Microsoft would have been stymied. 92% would have been stymied if the user weren't running as an administrator. That's enough reason to do this. Hey, I appreciate the call, Bob. It's something I should have been beating this drum for forever, and I am, but I will now. I will from now on. Tim in Huntington Beach. I think you're going to be our last caller of the day. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I appreciate the call. I get a quick question. Quick background. My first computer was an Apple II at
what, 64K?
Awesome. Yeah, 64K, yeah.
Thought I was on top of the hill when I upgraded to 128.
Ah, those were the days. At great expense, I might add.
Oh, yeah, don't even talk about what I paid for the printer at that time.
So quickly, because we're running out of time, what can I do for you?
Okay, the megapixels and stuff.
It's nonsense. It's nonsense.
To the Canons.
Yeah.
And what? How important is the difference between like a 12 and an 18 and a 20 plus or something like that?
The most important thing is not how many dots there are on the sensor, but how big the sensor is. So a tiny sensor like a camera phone that has 20 megapixels on it, that's a little misleading. It's not going to be better than a big sensor with 20 megapixels. It's going to be worse. So really, it's related to the size of the sensor. Now, a big full-frame sensor, you can have a lot of dots on that, a lot of pixels on that, and that'll give you a higher quality photo. There'll be more detail in the photo. But there is also a limit. You can't go to an infinite number of megapixels because it'll resolve at a better it'll have a better ability to resolve than the lens itself. So those pixels are wasted. So it's a complicated equation. In general, the number of megapixels has most to do with how big the picture is going to be when you print it. The difference between 16 and 19 is minimal. Look at the size of the sensor. That's the key.
Okay, because I'm very partial to the Canons, and I'm somewhat price sensitive, so I'm looking at maybe the Rebel 3 versus the
excellent
the 3.1, the 4.1. You know, and I know the difference between those is 12 to 18. Is that really going to make
no.
a difference? I'm not making portrait. I'm not blowing these things up to 18, 24.
No. All the Rebels have the same size sensor, so that's a common feature. But I don't think those 5 extra megapixels or 6 extra megapixels are going to make much difference.
Okay, now last quick question. I've got an A1, which I dearly loved. It's a 2-pound camera, but I've got 40 pounds of glass.
Is that a film camera?
Yeah,
wow.
The A1
wow.
From 30-plus years ago.
Yeah.
But I've got 40 pounds of glass.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that glass it will work if you have an adapter. It will work with your new Rebel, but it won't work fully digitally. So, in other words, it won't autofocus. The camera won't communicate with it. You'll have to use it manually. But the glass is good, and all you need is an adapter. You may not even. I don't know if they use the same kind of adapter as the old film.
Well, my understanding is adapter does exist, but
yeah,
I just
of course it does.
Manual.
Yeah, but it will be manual because there's no communication between the camera
right.
and the lenses. But that doesn't mean you should throw those lenses out. Good glass is good glass. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great vacation, Heather. We'll see you next time. Leo Laporte. See ya. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.